From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. I'm so excited you're back with us after what I hope is a great weekend. If you're counting on great weather, I know in the Midwest you were challenged, and I know in the Northeast you were not outside because it was raining almost the entire time. Ellie Koneman will be with us. She served as U.S. Deputy Special Envoy and Monitor to Combat Anti-Semitism with the State Department, visiting fellow at the Independent Women's Forum, a finalist to be the next U.N. ambassador. So we know Prime Minister Netanyahu is here. We want to get perspective on that meeting. Charlie Hertz in studio, and he's fresh off 8 straight hours over the weekend and then 3 straight hours with us on Fox and Friends. A lot going on today. Fun stuff. The Dodgers are going to the White House. No controversy. They're going to be saluted for their world title. Everybody's showing up. This is really feels different, Trump, too. But let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Bibi Netanyahu is here. We expect he and President Trump to talk about these tariffs. Even though the U.S. and Israel are the best of friends, Israel still got hit with 17% tariffs on Liberation Day.
Yeah, Israel Prime Minister in the White House talk trade, Gaza, and Iran nukes. He can expect support and cooperation on all three as the Western world focuses on getting the remaining hostages out of captivity.
Number two.
We're working every day together. We're very close. We're wanting to deliver this one big, beautiful, glamorous bill that President Trump has been talking about so we can put the DOGE cuts in there. We can get physical responsibility under control, and we can look towards to balance our budget.
Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, the big, beautiful deal framework in the Senate. But the Republican House not liking it a lot. The president's pushing both sides together. It's going to be one of the most important things Trump's ever does in the White House.
Number one.
So the fact is the countries are angry and retaliating. And by the way, coming to the table, I got a report from the USTR last night that more than 50 countries have reached out to the president to begin a negotiation.
Yep, but will they take those talks and those calls? Kevin Hassett was just on with us on Fox and Friends after appearing on ABC, and he didn't indicate whether the president's looking to do a deal or not. Tariff trauma. Markets don't like the massive global tariffs, but at least 50 nations are willing to talk to us. Question is, the president looking to talk to them? So right now, the market's about 37,000, drops 944. Charlie Hurt, this is another one of those times that we're going to remember, right?
Yeah. No, I think what we're watching right now from President Trump right now on this, I mean, it's the biggest gamble that we've ever probably seen. You know, politicians they don't like to go through pain. And this is a guy who set out what he wanted to do. He ran his campaign on it. It's something he's been talking about a long time. And he's willing to withstand a lot of pain, obviously. And I think that, we talked to Peter Ducey earlier this morning. And obviously Peter has a great sense of what's going on in the White House. And I think that he's got a pretty good read on it, that Trump is okay with this level of pain right now if it means that he can get a really, 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 really big deal out of it. In some time.
I know, but it's a lot of the pain is it's not just him. It's the American people.
Well, then, but that's what
businesses.
I mean.
Yeah.
You know?
So the Dow futures are down 3%, and now it looks like
everybody
it's a
wants
bit worse.
To be loved all the time. You
right. S&P 500 has fallen 4.8%. So you have some people just wondering where they're going with it, but liking the idea of bringing manufacturing back, but it doesn't happen right away. So what he's done is 10% tariffs on nearly all foreign imports, 25% tariffs on all foreign cars, and steeper tariffs for 60 countries, including 34% tariffs on imports from China, 25% tariffs on products from South Korea. So almost every of them. I can tell you right now who has picked up the phone and called: Japan. Japan on Saturday said they plan to speak with President Trump within this week. Italy's economic minister says we're going to de-escalate. So the Cambodia prime minister shared a letter on social media saying negotiations with the Trump administration are at the earliest, want to do that at the earliest time, and pledging to drop tariffs to zero. Vietnam, same thing. Britain, same thing. So retaliation time for Canada, they turned around and gave us 25% tariff.
Yeah, and as always, you ask the most important question, which is, you know, does he actually want a deal? Is he negotiating right now, or does he really just want to have tariffs in place to make money off of tariffs? And, you know, either way, his best negotiating tactic is to sit pat for right now and say that, yeah, I'm going to wait for the best deal – to come along, but he's not even revealing to anybody whether he's willing to negotiate and whether he's looking for a deal. He views that as being in the strongest position. And if you talk to people inside the administration, one of the things that they will tell you is that they believe that, for example, with China, that China's economy is way more fragile than they let on, way more fragile than maybe most people in our country realize, and that they are desperate to come to the table.
It was interesting when they entered the WTO in 2000, they had 6% of the world's manufacturing. Now they have 32%. The lead story in the Wall Street Journal today is China, unlike when Joe Biden took office, they were belligerent, they were cocky, they had a swagger. This time they said they wanted to reach out right away, and they did. They even attended his inaugural. So they thought they were going to be able to talk. They reached out to Waltz on security issues, and Waltz never got back to him. They've reached out to, waited for some outreach when they said they're looking to do a deal. We did not reach out to him again. And now they said that they wanted to do a deal prior to this announcement, but they said there was no interest on the part of the Trump administration. So that could be part of the negotiation.
Yeah, and it's also an interesting, an important reminder that, you know, we talk about the power of the United States in terms of our military. We have the strongest military on the planet, starting to be rivaled maybe a little bit by China now, but we still have the largest, most powerful military on Earth, proven military on Earth. But, you know, even more powerful than that is our economy. And Donald Trump recognizes that is our most powerful tool.
I just wish we did stop with the TikTok. Just cut it off. They pulled it back. There was a deal done. They pulled it back at the last minute to get back. Okay, keep it. Yeah. Go ahead. You lost this. They're using it as a spy weapon anyway. You want access to our consumers? Well, knock it off. Say, just take it. See how they go. See what they think.
But it does demonstrate that China wants to make a deal, because the reason that people are negotiating is not because they're concerned about the middle class in America or the manufacturing base in America. They want to negotiate because this is hurting them, and which feeds right into Donald Trump's point. And that was the point that I thought was interesting out of our conversation with Kevin Hassett this morning.
I want you to see what Dave McCormick said to me Sunday night. I asked him, because he has that international background with Bridgewater as an investor, and in China, by the way. Cut 19.
Well, I think we're much better prepared to deal with it now in the following sense. What's happened since President Trump was president in 2017 was that you see many companies that have moved out of China because of the growing risk of China and built their supply chains throughout Southeast Asia or in other places. We need to bring some of those supply chains back to the United States, but we're less dependent on China than we were when President Trump was first in office, and that's in part because of the actions President Trump took then.
So he thinks we're more apt now to be able to absorb any type of economic pain.
Well, the other thing is that, you know, the idea of reorienting some of these other economies back to being revolving around the United States as opposed to China. And China has done a lot over the past, especially the last 4 years, making inroads all over the world and reorienting those economies around China as opposed to us. If this is something that comes out of these tariff negotiations, that we get countries like Vietnam and in Asia to reorient to the United States, that's a pretty big victory for Trump.
Here is Jim Cramer on CNBC. Cut one.
If the president doesn't try to reach out and reward these countries and companies that play by the rules, then the 1987 scenario, the one where we went down 3 days and then down 22% on Monday, has the most cogency. We will not have to wait out too long, will we? We'll know by Monday.
Cut two.
I feel like a sucker tonight because I am not a free trader and I do not believe in free trade. And I was just as tough, if not tougher, than his people, but they screwed it up. I was very let down as someone who really truly believes that free trade is awful for the American working person. This is what they came up with. Jeez, come on. Have some gumption. Have some math.
See, this is the first time I thought, well, maybe the stock market will go up on Monday, was when after he predicted that it was going to go down. You know, look, these are, you know, this argument that Donald Trump has been making, you know, obviously what we knew Wall Street was going to hate this. We knew that Wall Street was going to scream about this. And of course they are. But, you know, Donald Trump, as he has throughout his entire political career, is not he's not listening to the same people that all of the rest of the politicians are. He's listening to completely different people. And when you have somebody like Scott Bessent talk about, well, look at gas prices, oil prices have dropped in the last couple of days. Donald Trump is listening to a completely different set of people, and it's done well for him in politics.
So I want you to see. So Jamie Dimon sends out that letter every year. To what he thinks the economic forecasts are, where we stand politically. And by the way, he's not anti-Trump. Right. Maybe he was at one point, but he's not now. But he says this, and I don't think you agree with him here. I agree with him. I think we might have a different view, but let's see. He said, this is a small excerpt. I think the thing is like 10 pages. The autocratic nations of the world and some of the non-aligned nations would like to see a fragmentation of America's economic alliances and a weakening of our global economic position, including our status as the world's most powerful economy, a leader in innovation, and holder of the world's reserve currency. The game will be played by many players using many tactics over many years, but our long-term strategic goals should be crystal clear: to maintain the cohesion and strength of the Western world, including their economies. If the Western world's military and economic alliances were to fragment, America itself would inevitably weaken over time. How do you feel about that?
I totally agree with that. And I would say that Donald Trump agrees with that. The problem is that when you look around this country and you look at what has happened to the manufacturing base, and that's the best example of it. But you look at the ability, you have these people who are we're going to have our first trillionaires before we know it. You have these multi-billionaires, and then you have places like Martinsville, Virginia, which used to be a manufacturing base. And now today, basically all they manufacture today is meth. And you look around at what a single working family on one salary could afford back in 1960 versus what you have to do and how much money you have to make today to afford the similar lifestyle. It's, there's a lot of people who are hurting, who have been passed over by this global economy. And, maybe these are not perfect answers to all of that. But Donald Trump is the first person to come along. He's the first politician to ever come along and really successfully isolate what China has done to our economy and focus on that and give voice to people you can argue about it and say that you're much better off. They don't feel much better off.
So if this is, and I think this analogy is brilliant. I can't wait to share it with you. I can't wait to hear this. Do you know in boot camp, you're convinced the drill sergeant hates you, but what the goal is to make you a fantastic Marine in Paris Island? If this is the part of boot camp for our allies, I'm all for it. And NATO, I'm all for it, because it's going to make them stronger. It's going to make them think they're more of taking control of their own national interests, their own defense. Understand the economies. We're not going to coddle you like it's World War II. If the aim is to come out stronger.
Yeah.
Right.
But stop and think about it. You know Trump. You know he doesn't want America to be weak. You know
I'm talking about our allies.
I understand that. I understand. But that's my point, is that that's exactly what he wants. He wants people to recognize. He wants our allies to recognize that that we have to get something. We have it does us no good to have a hollowed out manufacturing base. And also, think about this. You care a lot about national security. Can you have national security if you don't make things like steel, things like medicines in this country? I don't know that you do have national security.
And I think pharma is going to come this week, by the way. Yeah.
And food, medicine, steel, being able to manufacture these things in this country. And those are all tied up in these foreign trade deals. And by the way, this whole notion of free trade, when you have quote-unquote free trade in agreements that are hammered out by two governments, I don't know that that's exactly free trade. There's a political negotiation in all of these things. And so the idea that Trump is going to step in and say, you know what, I'm going to renegotiate these things and negotiate them in a way that I think better benefits the American people, I don't think that that's a departure from whatever was free trade before.
All right. Listen, a couple more minutes with Charlie when we come back. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He had North passed away at his home in Florida. He had colorectal cancer, and that's it. Did a great job.
So why did you want to hear that again?
Just because it's just cancer. Just go with cancer.
I know. I was a little shocked how specific we got.
I was,
and by the way, I did not know that was a type of cancer. I thought that was a test to see if you had cancer. That's where pull back on this.
Yeah, well, this is why they teach remedial reading.
Harvard.
At Harvard. The whole thing, it was actually just a test. It didn't actually go out on air. It was just a test to see how your reading skills were improving.
Let me tell you something. It went on air, and people expect nothing less.
Yeah, I haven't checked on the Twitter sphere yet, but I'm sure there will be some comments.
Right. Listen, I don't make – it's a tough cancer to have. I miss Dennis the Menace already. I mean, that's – I did not know. It's a shame that he wasn't able to capitalize on that child stardom.
Yeah.
And be more of an impact as an adult. But Jay North will be missed, 73
yes,
years old.
Yes, indeed. But we still – I mean, I bet you were a Dennis the Menace when you were growing up. I bet you were a
not troubling. An overalls kid. You wore overalls.
Yeah.
I was
I bet you were like a class clown.
Mm.
Really?
The opposite.
Really?
Yeah.
You were a nerd? You got bullied a lot? Everybody took your lunch money?
That was afraid of me.
Speaking of your soccer skills?
Which one was soccer?
I don't know.
The world's most popular game? So here's yesterday, Tim Walz was approached by, was asked about why he covered for Joe Biden by Jake Tapper, who covered for Joe Biden. But he's writing a book about how bad Biden was, which is nuts. Cut 43.
Don't you think your party needs to acknowledge that President Biden was not up for the job of running for re-election and that this was a major mistake by the
Democrats? He made that decision.
I know, but you all went along with the idea that he was up for it, and he wasn't. And everybody saw it, and the country rejected it.
Yeah, well, look, history will tell us to go back on that. That very well could be the case,
what does that
Jake.
Mean?
What I'm concerned about is learning from those lessons. I would hope we would never do it again.
Okay, so what is your takeaway, Charlie? I don't want to tell you what Tim Walz thinks, or if he does. You tell me, what do you take from that answer?
Well, first of all, it looked like he was stumped by the fact that he was even being asked. It was almost like,
is this CNN?
He looked up and he saw colorectal in the teleprompter. He didn't know what to say. He just stopped him dead in his tracks. But I think, you know, I really do think that this is one of those things where you're talking long-term damage to the credibility of not just Tim Walz, but like Democrats across the board. Because, you know, it's one thing to get caught doing something bad. It's another thing to get caught doing something where you have been so completely lying for as long as they lied about all this stuff.
He was, and I want to bring this back, he was on with Shannon Bream a couple of weeks before Biden dropped out,
yep,
saying that he's going to be a surrogate. He's Joe Biden's the best. He's a historically
sharp as he's
great
ever been.
President. Yeah. So don't even think about bowing out now. And Adam Schiff saying, I only saw him in ceremonial situations.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you crazy?
Yeah.
Charlie,
lie.
Thanks so much.
Thank
Great
you.
Job on your 12 straight hours of TV.
That's right.
Back in a moment.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I don't buy those numbers. They are lying from the beginning. They are fabricating the data. We don't buy it. We know that we are fighting terrorists, and we are doing everything we can to minimize civilian casualties. They are doing exactly the opposite, and they are fabricating those data. So when I see like articles or news reports about the suffering in Gaza, I ask myself why they don't blame Hamas. They are the one who started this war 18 months ago. They are the one that actually invaded Israel. We had a ceasefire on October 6th. So with all due respect, there is suffering in Gaza, but the one to be blamed for that is only Hamas.
And that's why I feel many people around the world don't. By the way, there's a couple of revelations came out over the weekend. 3,400 names were taken off the dead list on those who lost their lives in Gaza, including 1,080 children. How do you do that? Well, that happens when you let the Hamas news agency provide you with the casualty numbers looking to maximize propaganda against Israel. By the way, this is a fact. 92% of the housing is gone. That's why Trump said, let's just move people out, rebuild it, and then we come back with more of a cosmopolitan setting and population. You might not like that idea, but it got people talking. And there was a rumor that Egypt was going to take between 250 to 500,000 Palestinians. And for those people who think innocent people were the only ones killed, 72% of those killed were men ages 13 to 55. 72%. That's fighting age, sadly, in that region. Eli Cohenim served as U.S. Deputy Special Envoy to monitor and combat anti-Semitism in the State Department during the Trump years. Could be going back there shortly. Eli, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back on, Brian.
First off, how does Hamas all of a sudden realize we overestimated the number of dead by about 4,000?
You know, it's kind of like relying on the former Soviet Union and Pravda for your numbers,
yeah,
right?
Brezhnev still has a cold.
Yeah. It's so outrageous, Brian. How would anyone rely on a foreign terrorist organization, a U.S. designated foreign terrorist organization, for their numbers on anything, right? And so, look, we've known from the outset that the so-called Hamas, you know, the Gaza Health Ministry, which is basically an arm of Hamas, has been sharing their numbers on so-called casualties from this conflict. But so have the Israelis. And I think that Fox News has been very clean on their reporting. Shame on all of the other media outlets who've decided to run with the Hamas numbers.
So it looks like the Israeli defense minister came out and said, Minister Katz says, I instructed the IDF to extend the military operation and deal Hamas a heavy blow in response to the launches yesterday. The big difference now, the IDF is going to clear and they're going to hold. Hold land. Why do you think that is?
Brian, it's a well overdue step. Look, we know that the Biden administration was withholding arms, armaments, and even, you know, smaller level munitions that the Israelis desperately needed to fight this war. And so essentially the Biden administration was tying Israel and the IDF's arms behind their backs while they were trying to fight this seven front war. Now we've got the Trump administration coming in, and every day there are wonderful announcements coming in of the Trump administration rearming and resupplying the Israelis. But I think more importantly, President Trump is supporting the Israelis and allowing them to prosecute the war as necessary to get to victory, mm-hmm. and then to end it and then to move on to the next phases, right? And part of that is going in and holding, Brian, like any war. What the Israelis right. were doing under Biden was they were going in and they were letting go of territory, and Hamas kept going back into those areas and getting resupplied again. So the Israelis needed to fight this differently, and now I think President Trump is giving them a free hand to do it.
And what do you think they're going to talk about today?
Okay, a lot on the agenda. We know certainly tariffs, and Brian, I saw you earlier this morning on Fox and Friends discussing that with Danny Danone, the U.S. Israeli ambassador to the U.N., and so tariffs obviously is a big, big part of that conversation. However, there's more conversations I think that need to take place behind the scenes. Certainly, Iran. Iran is a ticking clock, and so we need to see what happens with Iran. But also, I would say that I'm sure there's conversations going on also about the region and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and normalization. Let's remember that President Trump has his first upcoming overseas trip to Riyadh.
Right. So we know that Israel and Saudi Arabia get together, but he's like, can't do it while Gaza's a mess. And prior to the attacks, if Trump had stayed in office, something would have been done. I don't think there's any doubt about it, judging by what the prince has shown to be. But I just wonder, do you think that there should be more of an idea that at least Netanyahu projects or presents about what he sees happening with Gaza? Because other people have said, hey, what about an idea where Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and others have troops there, kind of an international force? Let them supervise the rebuilding of. I don't hear anything from the prime minister on that. Should he be doing that?
Yeah, I think that the Israelis have shown an openness and a willingness to have the moderate Sunni Arab neighboring countries play a big role in Gaza. I think, Brian, though, as you know, Gaza is such a tricky situation because even those moderate Arab states are a little hesitant to go in there until there is security control by the Israelis. I'll tell you why. Because can you imagine the optics of Arab forces shooting on other forces, even if it's Hamas terrorists, who the Sunni states can't stand? Muslim Brotherhood is a big threat to them, big threat to Israel, shared threat. However, the optics are very difficult. And so I think that everyone in the region is walking a fine line. But to go back to your earlier point, President Trump had everything set up for more peace deals at the end of his first term with the Abraham Accords. He even told us there were 8 Muslim and Arab countries that wanted to make peace. And so let's give the president some time because I think he's taking us there.
Do you think your people say, Ellie, that they were making some damage to Houthi rebels? I mean, I saw that video over the weekend where these guys are sitting in a circle, all their leaders dead. And we're trying to aim for leaders, not just launchers. Are we making progress?
Oh, absolutely. Look, let's not forget that under the Biden administration, the world literally lost freedom of navigation. And I understand that some products internationally were up 30% because of the Houthis missile attacks on naval ships as well as commercial ships. So, again, President Trump has come in less than 100 days, and he's restoring order. He's freeing up international waters for us. And so the attacks on the Houthis have been decimating. There might be more to go, but I'll give you a clear evidence of how successful it's been. We saw reporting coming out of Iraq that the Iran-backed militias in Iraq are ready to de-arm because they've learned the lesson of the Houthis.
I'd love to see that. So Danny Dannon, as you mentioned, the ambassador was on with us, and he thinks that Iran is definitely going to be a subject that they are bringing up today in the White House. Cut 33.
We are very happy that Iran is out of Syria, but we should not allow anyone to step in and to promote instability in the region. And I'm sure that President Trump will discuss it with the prime minister.
But he doesn't want Turkey to take over in that area. And I also don't believe we should be pulling out our 1,000 troops, because we have a watchdog on ISIS, and the prison full of ISIS fighters are going to go back out. We're essentially putting ISIS back in the battlefield.
Yeah, U.S., you know, troops on the ground certainly is a huge deterrent to all the bad guys in the region. And I think keeping an eye on Erdogan right now is really important. Brian, I don't know how much reporting you've seen on this, but there's a huge, massive protest movement right now in Turkey against Erdogan. And so, you know, let's see if he can outlast his own, instability in his own country and people who want him out of
jail
power.
Didn't he jail his opponent?
He did. He's jailing his opponent, and people are in the streets in the millions against that in Turkey right now. So, and this is, as you just mentioned, the Turks seem to be wanting to increase their presence in Syria, and Israel is giving them a loud and clear message. They do not want the Turks on their border. So I think that is certainly a topic of conversation between the president, Netanyahu, and of course, Turkey is complicated because they're a member of NATO. So this is another issue that will require President Trump's leadership.
So we also know that over the weekend, the new Syrian government said we have a whole bunch of chemical weapons we didn't know that were here, that the world didn't know existed. I'm wondering how much, and this is a huge leap, I have not read this anywhere. I wonder how much you say return to sender to Saddam Hussein, because there was rumors that he got all that weapons of mass destruction out right before the war. And yet they have more toxic chemicals than anyone ever thought. I'm wondering if one Baathist to another Baathist.
You know, Brian, that's a really interesting question. And I think it would also give us a new lens to look at what happened with the U.S. invasion.
So do you think you have a shot at being ambassador to the United Nations?
Well, Brian, it was the honor and privilege of a lifetime for me to serve under President Trump in his first term as president. And so if the president would wish for me to serve. It would certainly be an honor and a privilege to serve under him again.
Right, because I think it's an important position. Didn't Nikki Haley show us that? You can, if you want to be forceful and you want to play a role, I think it's an important position.
It's an incredibly important position just because we know the UN is one of the most hypocritical, corrupt, anti-American international organizations there are out there. And Brian, I want to tell you something. We are funding 25% of the UN's overall budget. It is such an outrage. And so, you know, some of the priorities we should see at the United Nations, they need to be doged, right? Mm. We need to doge the UN. We need to hold them responsible for all of their hypocrisy, for their anti-Americanism. China has run rampant at the UN, and it's really become an organization that represents China's interests more than anything else. And so there's certainly a lot to do. And I know the president has a lot of good fighters to look at.
Right.
We've got wonderful people, you know, that the president is considering. And I know he's going to put in someone who can fight the good fight and carry out his mission there.
And lastly, there's one situation you have to do is also fight back against what seems to be an anti-Israel press. And I watched 60 Minutes last night. Now, I know 2 weeks ago they did Israel's perspective, but that was not overwhelming for Israel. They talked about the hostage families and had some bizarre questions. But now this week was to look at what it's like in Gaza. And you could see Scott Pelley was not on board with Israel's actions. And then asked this question about the reason why hospitals are targeted. And sadly, it's often because it turns out they are headquarters for Hamas fighters. A lot of them tunnels underneath hospitals. The video exists. But yet Scott Pelley asked this question to a Palestinian doctor. Cut 30.
The Israelis would tell you that they are attacking these facilities when they do because Hamas is using them as command and control centers.
I just saw doctors and nurses and patients. I didn't see any tunnels. I didn't see any uniformed Hamas soldiers. I didn't see any hostages.
So the old 60 Minutes would have said, well, I have video to show you. Let me show you this. Do you understand now why you've been targeted? Do you realize that they are putting your life in jeopardy as you probably do the right thing in trying to save the wounded?
Exactly right, Brian. And also, I want to point out something that this gentleman said on 60 Minutes right now, that segment you just
Palestinian
played.
Doctor.
The Palestinian doctor, right? He says, I didn't see any uniformed Hamas, okay? Now, this is a very interesting way for him to talk because the word uniformed is the key tell, right? Because, because you know this, Brian, right? The Hamas terrorists, what they do is they wear civilian clothes on a day-to-day basis, especially when they're trying to run from justice. But when they're putting on these parades, when they're bringing out the coffins of the Bibas babies and Shiri Bibas, their mother, and when they're doing these horror parades, then they're all in uniform. And that's about the only time they're walking around in uniform.
Right, nor name tags. Thanks so much, Ellie Kohanim.
You got it.
Kohanim, there you go. Ellie, good luck. Hope you have some role because they definitely need an aggressive Middle East envoy that understands what's going on. All right.
Thanks,
Ellie,
Brian.
You got it. When we come back, we're going to take some calls and also go over some other things, including what happened on SNL. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
New York Mayor Eric Adams announced that he is leaving the Democratic Party. I assume to hit up the after party. An economic slowdown from tariffs could be especially hard on China because it's not easy to tell a child they're getting laid off.
That is fantastic. That's a great line. But they also had a couple of Morgan Wallen clever things that they added because Morgan Wallen walked out of them the other day. So I thought it was really interesting. The other thing I wanted to bring up, too, is Bill Maher met with the president of the United States. Evidently, he was extremely nervous when he went to the White House. I don't know why, because he's been critical of him and vice versa. So this is what he said. Now, keep in mind, this was before, on his podcast, before he went to the White House. This is one thing that he said about Trump. Cup 46.
Trump is one of the most effective politicians, whatever you think of the policy and him as a person, just as a politician, just understanding that always lean in to being more who you are. The people are not savvy about issues, but they smell a phony a mile away. And that kind of nobody else does it. You know, there's a couple of times when I've been his biggest critic for good reason. And when he got reelected, I said, I'm not going to pre-hate anything. And then the first week I said, well, there's lots of things I hate because I do. Okay, there's some things I don't hate also. But the way he can do that and sometimes kind of make me go, oh, man, I got to give it up. Like when he did that thing where the guy came in from the Taliban and he said, this is an aerial picture of your house. If during our withdrawal, one American is hurt, just know I know where you live. I was like, oh, can we just play the music now? Because I don't care. It's Donald Trump and he's the worst person ever, blah, blah, blah. I love that. One time they were doing something was going on with, and he said, you know what? When you come after New York, you got to go through me. It's like, oh, hometown boy. He has those moments that no other politician has. And the Democrats have to find that guy.
Yeah, or the woman, it could be. And that's what led me to this belief. So if you look at a Democrat now, you say, well, who's like that? I would say it is not Gavin Newsom, biggest actor. He's an actor. He's acting. He's acting as a left leader, and he's saying things that make him sound moderate, but all his actions are as a raging liberal who comes off like he's acting the job, as if he's auditioning, not getting it, by the way, as he's trying to audition to be president. Another inauthentic person, I think, is Hillary Clinton. We don't know the real her. We've never seen it publicly. The one behind the scenes is a lot different. The person who is another actor is Cory Booker. Probably a nice guy, but that is not real. All this stuff isn't real. You saw that with theatrics for 25 hours. You know who does seem real? Josh Shapiro, John Fetterman. They seem real. Wouldn't say I'm going to vote for them, but they are real. I would think that from what I could see, Governor Beshear looks real. I'm not saying I'm going to vote for him, but he's not acting. I'm not sure about Wes Moore. I really aren't. You know, he has the part, he's got the background and all these things. But so far, what he's seen, he's not done a strong job in Maryland. And I just don't see a lot of authenticity there. The thing that people liked about John McCain or didn't like about him, you knew exactly where he stood. And you knew if he changed his mind, you knew why. I think Lindsey Graham is sincere. But the whole acting thing, when people get up there and act tough or act nice or act as if they care when they don't, we could all see right through it. Trump changed all that. And they used to say, you know, if a speech doesn't last too long, if you don't deliver it a certain way, it's never going to work. And this is the way you debate. And he changed everything. And then people should learn from it. The thing that changed everybody's opinion on Trump is that he won again more convincingly, because it showed you that everything that you said about him and that you thought about the American people, they would never vote for him again, especially after the indictments and the way he acted. All that stuff is gone. So you have a choice. You could sit there and say, I hate the country, which means I hate Trump. Or you could say, maybe I was wrong about him.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moment of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. New York is front and center on a couple of issues. Number one, when it comes to DEI and the demands from the federal government to get rid of it, New York's digging in. Also, when it comes to the mayor's race, this thing is crazy. The current mayor left his party. He's going to be there through November. And the scandal-ridden mayor, governor, who now they're begging to be mayor, there's a story in the New York Post today. The 10 politicians who backed Andrew Cuomo's resignation and pushed him overboard are now all endorsing him to be the mayor. I mean, do you have less? Could you possibly stand for less in your life, considering what he did and what he even did above board? So much that reflected on the Democratic Party that got them into so much trouble. But good luck with that. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Bibi Netanyahu is here. We expect he and President Trump to talk about these tariffs. Even though the U.S. and Israel are the best of friends, Israel still got hit with 17% tariffs on Liberation Day.
And that was last week. And then there's this week, and we're already down, about 1,000 points. That is Prime Minister Netanyahu is meeting at the White House right now. They'll talk about Gaza, Iran nukes, and so much more. But first and foremost, they will begin with trade. Then we'll talk about everything else.
Number two.
We're working every day together. We're very close. We're wanting to deliver this one big, beautiful, glamorous bill that President Trump has been talking about so we can put the DOGE cuts in there. We can get fiscal responsibility under control, and we can look towards to balance our budget.
Yep, big, beautiful deal framework passed in the Senate. But the Republican House is not liking a lot of it. The president is pushing both sides to get something done. It will be his most important piece of legislation in his two terms, I think.
Number one.
So the fact is the countries are angry and retaliating. And by the way, coming to the table, I got a report from the USTR last night that more than 50 countries have reached out to the president to begin a negotiation.
That was Kevin Hassett. He rejoined us this morning on Fox and Friends. Tariff trauma. Markets don't like the massive global tariffs. At least 50 nations have reached out. You just heard the question. Is the president looking for a deal or does he just want the tariff revenue? Let's bring in Michael Goodwin. Michael had a column that raised some eyebrows. He says Trump bets the White House and GOP-controlled Congress on tariffs and possibly his legacy, wouldn't you think?
Good morning, Brian. Yes. Look, I think that if he were to lose the House, for example, in the midterms or even the Senate, certainly it would change his presidency. It would affect what he could get done. No doubt the rabid Democrats would impeach him again. And I think that the country would suffer for it because what he's been doing so far, sealing the border, going after the schools on the anti-Semitism, I mean, these are big things. The DOGE cuts to the government, I think, are absolutely essential. That's not to say everyone is 100% right, but the idea that we can continue to borrow money at this clip and not suffer for it is insane. So something's got to be done there. Trump has the nerve to do it. But the tariff thing could be the final big story if it continues in this way with the markets falling like this. As I wrote in the column, you know, people have lost 10, 15, sometimes 20% now with the S&P and bear market of their nest eggs. I mean, that's an enormous right. amount of money. And these are not necessarily investors. These are people just put the money there and hoped it would grow slowly and gradually over the years and would be there. But so now it's just being wiped out in a flash.
So do you think he wants a deal or do you think he wants the tariff revenue?
I think he wants a deal. He needs a deal. I mean, I think the deal is the best way. The tariff revenue, it certainly adds to the government's ability to fund itself. But look at the havoc it's causing. And we're just in the early innings, so we don't really know what would happen down the road if the tariffs were to actually stay in place. I mean, would people really be able to come to this country to build their businesses? Would they move right. their businesses here? Would American products be sold better elsewhere? Overseas with all those tariffs piled on top of them? I mean, that's the whole point of going to war over tariffs, is that you want your products to be treated fairly in foreign markets. But if the tariffs stay in place, that's the idea, that protectionism is kind of mutual destruction, that it hurts businesses on both sides of the battle lines. And people suffer because the opportunity to, certainly in America, the greatest consumer nation, just things either are not available or they're outrageously expensive if they're right. not made in this country. I mean, I think there are a lot of questions, Brian, about what products that we don't make now would we start making under President Trump's ideal situation. Would American companies make socks again and underwear? I mean,
sure.
all the things that we've been outsourcing to China and Vietnam, et cetera, would those plants come here? I mean, what would the jobs pay?
So I wanted to also get a look at some of the people on his team that seem to be differing from him. Elon Musk, first and foremost, he says this from Italy yesterday, cut 16.
I hope that the United States and Europe can establish a very close partnership. We obviously are, there's an alliance already, but I'm hopeful that there can be a very close relationship with America and Europe. I'm hopeful, for example, with the tariffs that at the end of the day, I hope it is agreed that both Europe and the United States should move, ideally, in my view, to a zero tariff situation.
So that's fine. So Peter Navarro, who sadly, I think he is incompetent, he's the White House's senior counselor for trade and manufacturing. He called out Peter Navarro. He basically says that he went to Harvard and that's a bad thing because he has to unlearn all this stuff. So Navarro answered Musk, cut 17.
No, I mean, Elon, when he's in his Doge lane, is great. But we understand what's going on here. We just have to understand. Elon sells cars, and he's in Texas assembling cars that have big parts of that car from Mexico, China. The batteries come from Japan or China. The electronics come from Taiwan. And he's simply protecting his own interests, as any business person would do. We're more concerned about Detroit building Cadillacs with American engines. Mm. And that's what this is all about. So it's fine. There's no riff here. Look, Elon, he's got X. He's got a big microphone.
So what he doesn't understand is that's exactly what American cars have to deal with. And you talk to them, they're not necessarily being selfish. You can't get batteries elsewhere. That's the problem. You're not going just for the cheaper. You're going for where it actually is. So Mexico and China, because of the USMCA that was set up, that's what was best for Tesla. I'm not making excuses for Tesla, but it's the same thing with the American cars. If you talk to these American car companies, they move these cars back and forth to build them.
Yes, and a lot of ports are a lot of parts are imported, and a lot of, for example, some of the German and Japanese manufacturers have actually moved plants to the United States, although they may still get some parts from their home corporate homes. These are obviously very complicated issues. Everybody will be talking about self-interest. There's no question about that. And I think that one of the problems here, Brian, is that this feud between Musk and Navarro sort of does reflect what I think is a lack of clarity that's coming from the White House on this. You're getting answers that don't sufficiently address the scope of the market turmoil. And, you know, President Trump has been quoted some places as saying there will be some pain or whatever. I think he needs to elaborate. Is this what he had in mind? Is this 20% fall in the S&P? Is that what he meant by some pain? I think that they need to clear the air, that they need to express, I think, a more hopeful and optimistic line, because even the Republicans in Congress now are very concerned about this. The midterms are coming up. They're 19 months away. Ted Cruz, for example, said it'll be an absolute bloodbath.
Hey, you know what? Let's hear from Ted Cruz. Cut 8.
Tariffs are a tax on consumers, and I'm not a fan of jacking up taxes on American consumers. So my hope is these tariffs are short-lived and they serve as leverage to lower tariffs across the globe.
There he goes. And he's pretty loyal to Trump.
Yes. And I think he captured the goal. But he did a better job in that, 3 seconds explaining the goal a bit than the White House has done. Now, there's a lot of noise. It's hard to cut through. But when you have Navarro and Musk taking shots at each other, I think it just gives ammunition to the other side. Like, for the Democrats, we have an issue. Finally, we have an issue. We have something we can run on. People are doubting Donald Trump on the economy. There's a possibility of inflation, a possibility of a recession. All of these things are playing, and we must never forget the political side to these things. And this is something that the Democrats are seizing on. And you know, the Republicans in Congress fear it because they're speaking up. I mean, even senators like Grassley in Iowa talking about putting some limit on a president's ability to impose tariffs. Like, it can go on for 60 days, but after that, you need congressional authorization. Well, you're never going to get congressional authorization in this Congress, certainly, or in many Congresses. So I think that Trump better hurry up if he can make deals. If that's his goal, is to have reciprocal, really, truly reciprocal, 10 for 10 or 0 for 0, I think he better start showing that that's going to be what he achieves with this, because right now there's a lot of pain and a lot of doubt and not a lot of support as I read it.
Wait a second. I'm not sure what just happened, but the market's now up 830 points. So I don't know what just happened. But, you know, he's got 50 countries calling him to make deals. If you want to start incrementally giving people confidence, you come back with 50 better deals.
Well, you come back with even 3 deals, and I think everything changes. And maybe that's what's going on. I mean, I did read that there were some technical signals in the market that, you know, it was becoming more of a buy than a sell. But I don't know if there's any other news that people have heard about it. But look, this is like a panic in a way. I mean, that's as crazy as the plunge down.
I mean, you realize when we started this segment, we have lost 900 points, and now we're up 543. Oh, my goodness. What's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, that's an incredible reversal in a few minutes.
I don't know,
Brian, maybe you and I did it. Maybe because of what we're saying here.
More you, Michael Goodwin. My last thing is another area of expertise is what's going on in New York, because it is a national story. You have the current mayor deciding he's going to be an independent, saying that'll keep him into November. Curtis Lee was going to get the Republican nomination. And now you have, I'm looking at this story today in your favorite newspaper, 10 politicians who backed Andrew Cuomo to resign, pushed him overboard as governor, are now endorsing him to be mayor. Ladies and gentlemen, what happened? Was he exonerated on those 10 women? All of a sudden, looking back now, does that book deal make sense? His actions during the pandemic with the nursing homes? Could you have less of a spine possibly in politics than this?
You know, Brian, I think I understand the rationale for most of them. It's essentially they see him as somebody who can get things done. But I think what they're missing, apart from the issues that you'd mentioned with the nursing homes and the women, what they're missing is many of the things he got done are now the problems in New York City and New York State. For example, congestion pricing.
Yep.
He authorized that.
Keep going. Many
of the criminal elements of turning the courts into turnstiles, he signed all of that legislation.
Yep.
Now, he will say, well, look, I didn't have a choice. There were all of these progressives had taken over the legislature. Governor's not a king. He said that in a meeting with the Post editorial board that I attended. But the fact is, you signed it. Your signature is on it. And if you make them override, make them veto it if it's no good. But he didn't. He signed it. So there are a lot of complications to Andrew Cuomo's candidacy. I also wonder how much his heart is really into this. A lot of people say he's kind of going through the motions. It doesn't feel like he's fully engaged in this. I think there's something to that as well.
I wouldn't know. You would. You had a meeting with him, but you know how it is. He's so opinionated. Eric Adams, for example, the first thing he did is go up to Albany and ask to get rid of no cash bail, and they laughed at him. I know exactly where he stands on the fight. He didn't want to spend the billions of dollars on the illegal immigrants. Now, should he have made a stronger stand early? Absolutely. So, but at least I know where he stood. I know how he feels about it. So for Cuomo to say, I'm signing it, but I had no choice, he seemed to be embracing it at the time. I don't know. I just can't believe how people just throw away their...
I said to him, you know, one argument against you is you're a weather vane. In 2010, he was saying, you know, I have a lot in common with the Tea Party.
Oh, let me just share this with...
In 2018, he's saying I'm a progressive.
So listen to this. When did Hassan say this? Because we just had him on the line, and I just interviewed him on Fox and Friends, and I talked to him in the break, and he was not budging. Listen to this. Kevin Hassett, Trump is considering a 90-day pause in tariffs for all countries except China. Now, that's exactly what Bill Ackman requested, said, I solely support you, Mr. President, on your tariffs. Let's take a look at this before you do it, and I ask you for a 90-day pause. It looks like he did exactly that. Let me go back to the exact language. Well, I'll look it up when I'm going to get back. But listen, I've gone over. A lot happened during our time, Michael. Thanks so much. I'll have more perspective on this when we return. I'll have more details. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
So, yeah, Donald Trump did shock the world, and the market went down. But what if tomorrow President Trump announces that 20 countries, they're cutting a deal and they're going down to zero tariffs? What if in 1 week we've got 50 countries with deals coming in to
Congress? Then you're not going to revive manufacturing, are you?
I understand your point with Larry Summers, but certainly if that did happen, it would change our trading relationships with the entire world, and the economy would boom, and these losses would come back. We just don't know.
Right. Ryan Priebus, you're 100% right. And that's what I was asking Kevin Hassett this morning. And after he left Fox and Friends, somewhere in between, Reuters is now reporting that Trump is considering a 90-day pause in tariffs for all countries. Now, where'd that come from? You could say from Bill Ackman, who is an ally. He said this. He's a big-time billionaire. He said the president has an opportunity to call a 90-day timeout and negotiate and resolve an unfair asymmetrical tariff deals and induce trillions of dollars of new investment in our country. If, on the other hand, on April 9th, they launch an economic nuclear war on every country in the world, business investment will grind to a halt, consumers will close their wallets, pocketbooks, and we will severely damage our reputation in the rest of the world. It looks like he took his advice on it. And there's nothing wrong with taking people's advice. Now, if you come out and say, I've cut a deal with Israel, I've cut a deal with Cambodia, game on.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is the biggest self-inflicted wound we've put on our economy in history. We're increasing inflation because the prices are higher because of the tariffs. That gives people less spending power. That means fewer jobs. Markets are looking at all of that, and they think companies are going to be worth $5 trillion less than they thought before these tariffs started. And that's just the loss to companies. If you add in the loss to consumers, a reasonable estimate would probably be something like $30 trillion.
And that is Larry Summers. You know, by the way, to his credit, he was a critic of the rescue package. I'm not sure he was. I think he was for the infrastructure deal, but the whole new Green Deal package that was inflation reduction package during the Trump years, I think he was against that. And he thought the deficit was an issue. And what makes that different is he was Treasury Secretary and former Harvard Law professor for Barack Obama. With me in studio is Taylor Riggs, co-anchor of the Big Money Show. Taylor, when I was on 15 minutes ago, I watched the market go up 800 points. And I said, well, you know, what's the news? And it turned out Reuters was reporting that there'd be a 90-day pause on all the tariffs. And what did you just find out?
Well, CNBC is now just reporting that they're speaking with White House officials and saying that that 90-day pause in tariffs is, quote, fake news, which is why the market then rolls back over. And we're close to back to where we started. We're down about 2% across the board. So you'd still cut your losses in half from the deep, deep lows of this morning. But again, this to me shows that the market is so desperate for any tweet, any signal that we're pulling back on some of these tariffs. Because the minute you got hints of a rumor, the NASDAQ had jumped 3 to 4%. I have never in my career seen some of these massive wild swings. At some point on the Dow, I think the swing was 3,000 points from the down up to the top. So this is a market that's very volatile, that is on edge, waiting for any news from the White House. But for now, we keep hearing that the White House is standing firm. And I hate to say this, I'm of the opinion that actually a 90-day pause isn't good. Businesses really need to be able to plan.
90 days of uncertainty.
That's an additional 90 days of like, well, now what? And what does 90 days from now look like? And I think businesses want clarity. I want to know, when are tariffs being implemented? What is the impact? If you're telling me there's a delay 90 days from now, I still can't plan for the next 90 days, because 90 days from now is still more uncertain than it was today.
No question. That's what Bill Ackman asked for in that long letter to Trump, saying, I'm for this. I understand it. I'm with you. Just not this way. He said it's too much uncertainty all the way down to the dry cleaner in your neighborhood, to the business, to the bank. And Jamie Dimon had something similar. He says he, even though tariffs grow up, not like this, essentially, they're saying.
Yeah, but, that's fair.
Right. So then my thing is, it would actually help the market is what we had ruled a soundbite of Ronnie's previous before. And he said, if you can tell me a deal with Cambodia, a deal with Vietnam, that, by the way, came to the table, deal with Italy. Italy said, we will de-escalate. And then we have the Japanese foreign minister, prime minister came out and said on Monday, he's having tough but very fair parameters are being set for negotiations with U.S. reciprocal tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
So this, as those, if those deals come in,
I
President knows a good deal when he sees it.
Yeah.
Why does he need them all at once?
Yeah, that's a good point. I keep hearing, though, that China is the head honcho. So if you have China, any deal with Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, it sounds good, but that doesn't solve the ultimate uncertainty of China. Now, I will say what is good is since COVID, companies like Nike, companies like Apple, a few of these did diversify their supply chain.
To Vietnam.
Yes, to Thailand, to Cambodia, to absolutely Vietnam, to your point. So that would cushion the blow a little bit if we still want to put pressure on China. But again, China is the head honcho. I think to me, this comes down to what is the goal? If the goal is a national security issue, I think Americans can really understand,
right,
I need to be making antibiotics in my country. China is not my friend. If they want to pull antibiotics, they can. They can just decide no.
Just like they came with rare earth and hurt our military.
Exactly. And then what do we do? So that I can get on board with. I think some of the messaging here is if it's revenue, if it's not free trade, but it's about closing a deficit, we're never going to close our deficit with some of these countries. So, again, I think we just need to understand a little bit more about the why behind this.
Absolutely. So here's Rand Paul. Tell me if they think this is extreme the other way. Cut seven.
Historically, tariffs have also led to political decimation. When McKinley most famously put tariffs on in 1890, they lost 50% of their seats in the next election. When Hans Smoot put on their tariff in the early 1930s, we lost the House and the Senate for 60 years.
Interesting. So look, and now I'm starting to understand, I think, why they did tariffs before tax cuts, whereas in Trump 1.0, it was tax cuts first and then tariffs second, because we have midterms next fall and they probably needed to get as much of this tariff stuff out before, and then hoping that tax cuts later this year will bear the brunt of some of that before voters go to the midterms next fall.
Right.
This, though, is my long-term concern. China doesn't live by two-year, four-year cycles. They live by 100-year cycles because they don't do elections. That's why they play the long game. And I think many Americans here are trying to understand in the short term. And that's why I don't always love talking about the markets, because the market just is trying to get me to a profit to 3 months from now. We have quarterly results coming out this Friday. Frankly, great, but that's not my long-term concern. The long-term concern, again, is reorienting the supply chain for supply antibiotics, rare earth minerals. China doesn't have to think in these three-month interim. They're thinking in century long, and they're playing the long game. But that is the push-pull that we see right now.
And by the way, the Wall Street Journal has a report today that China wanted to do a deal with the president. He wanted to talk to him. But the president was not in a rush. And then when they reached out to Michael Waltz's is his equal on their side, the foreign minister, Waltz never got back to him on different things. He said he wanted to create the same type of relationship he had with Jake Sullivan. But remember, they came in with a swagger and they berated the Trump team, the Biden team early on. This is the fact that Trump team has gone cold has unnerved China. And now we understand they are into the fight mode in terms of economic fight mode rather than do a deal. But as people have told me, and I want you to hear what Dave McCormick said. As you know, he's a global business guy. He's from Bridgewater. Now he's senator. He thinks we're better equipped now to fight China trade-wise than we were in 2017. Cut 19.
Well, I think we're much better prepared to deal with it now in the following sense. What's happened since President Trump was president in 2017 was that you see many companies that have moved out of China— mm-hmm. because of the growing risk of China and built their supply chains throughout Southeast Asia or in other places. We need to bring some of those supply chains back to the United States. But we're less dependent on China than we were when President Trump was first in office. And that's in part because of the actions President Trump took then.
And we are the market they got to consume, right?
We are.
We're the consumers of Chinese products.
We are the $20 trillion global consumer.
Yeah.
We import that much every year. It is shocking. Spot on that in part thanks to COVID as well, with all of those companies nearshoring, onshoring, diversifying out of China. We learned our lesson, but just not enough, according to the president. So again, that is the push-pull in the markets. And I think more people now than ever, obviously, you know, I think COVID really made us question too. And I think I've brought this up with you before. If you promised me that I could have a cheap TV from China 10 years from now, my TV would be $300 instead of $400 10 years from now. Is that a trade I'm willing to make, even though it means that my daughter and my granddaughter may not have a future in this country because there may not be jobs here? That's the trade-off.
You want that explained.
Many Americans, I don't think I'm not willing to make that bet. I don't need another cheap TV from China at the expense of national security. That's what Americans understand. But again, the cost of getting there, it's going to absolutely be a bumpy road.
Yeah. What do you think of Jamie Dimon's letter? I don't know if you had a chance to digest it, but he put that out.
Yeah,
his
briefly,
forecast,
you know, some the hyperboles. You know, Jamie Dimon is the smartest person. They call him Fortress Dimon because he's built up a fortress massive balance sheet that is the envy of the world. But I will say he speaks in these weather patterns. He called for hurricanes, then he called for, you know, all of these horrible weather events when it comes to the economy. So I hear him and I understand that he is insight into the consumer. But I also know that, again, they're just thinking about their books 3 months from now. What are their quarterly earnings look like? And frankly, Americans in the middle of this country don't care what your profits look like 3 months from now. They want a job.
Right. But right now, jobs are okay and oil prices are down, right?
It is. I mean, this is.
And the Fed hasn't moved.
I hope this wasn't in Trump's card, but if it is, they're brilliant. Oil's below 60. And guess what? Our 10-year treasury is below 4%. So if we have to refinance all of our debt coming due in 3 months and we get to do it at below 4% rather than 5%, which is where it was 6 months ago, we look brilliant. The problem is if yields and oil are falling because there's a global demand worry, then that's different. But either way, Scott Bessent said they're targeting a 10-year yield below 4%. And I have to say, they got it.
Wow. I can't thank you enough. Taylor Riggs, about to host her show at noon, right?
Yeah,
2 hours.
Noon to two.
Yeah, so it's going to be exciting. I don't know what rumor is going to make the market go up or what the president's going to say. Essentially, I just want, before you go, I want you to share with what the president just put out.
Okay.
Because it's typical him. Let me see. I just had his Truth Social. Are you on Truth Social?
I am not.
I think it's a mistake for you not to be on Truth Social.
I know. I've got to get on it. I was trying to give up some social media for Lent.
He said.
To fix my brain.
He said to see.
We're still looking for it.
Well, let me see. He basically said to toughen up. Don't be weak.
Take your medicine. Yeah. Kind of that stuff. Yeah. I mean, so look, the anecdotes have been. To redo this, if you need surgery, this is the patient who is being taken off the ventilator after surgery. The markets are telling you that we just went through surgery without anesthesia. That was pretty hard.
Here's what we put out an hour ago. The United States has a chance to do something that should have been done decades ago. Don't be weak. Don't be stupid. Don't be panicked. By the way, misspelled that, I think. A new party based on the weak and stupid people. Be strong, courageous, and patient, and greatness will be the result.
It's easier to do supply chain rejigs now than it will be 5 years from now. Every day we wait, it gets harder.
Right.
Because every day we wait, we get more embedded with China.
All right. And then he's pointing out different deals that could be in the works. And that's one thing I think he would love to do. Guys, got another deal announcement, another deal announcement, another deal announcement.
Desperate for an off-ramp? Let's give him an off-ramp.
Go get him, Taylor. Thanks so much. Back in a moment with your calls. 1-866-408-7669. And your rumors. Don't move.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
President Trump, the White House, or in the House and the Senate, we're working every day together. We're very close. We're wanting to deliver this one big, beautiful, glamorous bill that President Trump has been talking about for the American people, so we can put the DOGE cuts in there, we can get fiscal responsibility under control, and we can look towards to balance our budget.
So that's what they're talking about. They had a Voterama on Friday to outline the budget, what the president will be the probably one of the biggest impacts of his two terms, because it's going to lock in all the price cuts and the tax cuts from last time, and will lock it in permanently. So then someone has to come in and redo it. So that means the Democrats got to come in with a 60-vote margin and be able to redo it. We'll see if that even happens, especially if the economy's booming when Trump leaves. No one's going to redo it. So they knew these tax cuts were expiring, and they knew the next president would have that option. If they don't renew the tax cuts, there'll be the biggest tax increase in American history. So the question is, what did they agree on with the Senate? They unlocked reconciliation, so made it eligible to be passed with a simple majority vote. The tax cut extensions, that's fine. But what they also did is put in the no tax on tips and no tax on Social Security. They put spending cuts. Well, the specific cuts aren't fully detailed. The resolution includes instruction for committees to adjust spending. It directs the House and Ways Committee to propose a $4 trillion increase in the debt limit that will give them some breathing room for a few years. So it goes into detail. But it didn't take long for the House to answer back. Chip Roy said on a conference call that he was opposed to what the Senate put out. You had a few others speak up. Susan Collins joined Rand Paul in opposing the budget resolution from the Senate side. And then you have others who spoke up. I personally find it interesting. If you told me Democrats were upset with the spending bill and weren't going to sign with it, it's okay. But if you're like on a team and you're trying to work out the best deal possible, why is it beneficial to come forward and just put down what the guys have been working out? So Senator James Lankford was asked about this week. Cut 28.
Do you think that President Trump's budget bill, his agenda, is in real trouble?
It's not. Let me say the difference here. People are going to look at the Senate budget and say, you're not reducing enough spending on this. We've got to reduce a lot more spending. And we're all nodding our heads going, yes, we do have to reduce a lot. But a budget bill, as it comes out, is this wide framework to say, let's get started. There's no detail in it. And everybody says, where's all the detail? There is no detail in a budget. It's just a framework. The next stage is when we go on to detail. So this bill simply allows us in the process to go to the next bill. Most Americans don't track the process. They want to know what the product is at the end.
Yeah, and Jody Arrington, who on the Senate side, who's gotten ahead of the Budget Committee, he's not thrilled with what he saw there. All right, okay, that's fine. But can you just say, here's where we're different? Do you have to come out and make headlines? Because every Democrat's waiting for Trump's agenda to fall apart. Trump immediately hopped on the line and started pushing for the House to pass the Senate version. President doesn't care about the details, and I don't have a problem with that. You had a previous president that did nothing except sign these bills when they came to his desk. He outlined absolutely nothing, just screamed about a few things and said things like, you know, Jim Crow 2.0 about what happened in Georgia with the voting reform that happened in Georgia. So I think that's pretty interesting. Mark Wayne Mullen, you heard from. Senator John Barrasso was asked about Jody Arrington specifically because he has so much power in the House side. Cut 27.
Jody Arrington, the budget chairman, called it unserious and disappointing, accused your Republican colleagues of creating $6 trillion in new costs and a mere $4 billion in enforceable cuts. Is this headed for failure in the House?
No. We are united in what we believe in terms of making sure we have a nation that is safe and prosperous. The Speaker of the House and the leadership of the House came out and endorsed what we have done and said, hey, we ought to move ahead and take that
next
step.
Five Republicans come against
it. So what we have
seen, narrow margin.
But they all agree with what we want to do, mm-hmm. which is unleash American energy to get energy prices down for people. They all agree that we ought to make sure that we don't have these $4 trillion tax increases. They all want to make sure we secure the border. So all of the parts of what we have here are part of what we want to have done.
So they're going back and forth on it. And still, even though you hear about the House passing their framework and the Senate passing their framework, nobody's even talking about passing this in the spring, which really bothers me. I mean, What else are you doing? Raising the tax ceiling. You got to tell these people to stay in over the weekends, not go home, work hard, get things done. There's plenty of time in your life to go relax. But it's not going to happen now. And if they go home in the summer like they do most of August, there's no excuses for that. They got to pass this thing. And there's so many other things to do. And that's why I have no sympathy when now it's Chuck Grassley, who I really like, comes out and says, well, I want to pass a resolution that says the White House has to come to us for any tariffs. You can't even keep up with the White House. They're doing so many things at one time because they know that they have very little time. The Senate's got to get that message, and to a degree, so does the House. All right, don't forget, I want to see you in Dayton, Ohio. History, Liberty, and Laughs with Fox Nation. In person, BrianKilmeade.com on stage.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. I don't need to tell you, we're back in action today and going full speed. Congressman Mike Collins is going to be here at the bottom of the hour. And Congressman Brian Stile, as chairman of the Committee on House Administration and a member of the Financial Services Committee, is with us now. You know, we know the big story is the tariffs. We're also talking about the big, beautiful bill, the framework of which passed the Senate Saturday. Ambassador Danny Dannon joined me this morning. Today, at this moment, the Prime Minister Netanyahu is meeting with President Trump. Three things on the agenda that we know of. One, they're friends. Number two, the tariffs. They say that if tariffs stick, the 17%, it'll cost Israel $39 billion. So that matters. He wants to get it down to zero on each. Even though it was unbalanced, he wants to balance it out, which is great. The other thing is, I think it's Iran and finishing off Gaza. I think he's got a big plan in place, and he wants Trump to buy in. So let's bring in Congressman Brian Stile. The chairman has got a lot in his plate. First and foremost, when we look at what's going on with the market, it's down 400 points. It was up briefly 800 points when it looked like Trump was going to put a 90-day pause on the tariffs. Chairman, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on.
So your thoughts about the tariff drama?
Well, our goal needs to be focused in on bringing in free, fair, and reciprocal trade, making sure that other countries are playing fairly with the United States. The president's actions give us an opportunity to be able to hold China accountable, and that requires working with our allies to hold China accountable, who for years have been abusing trade practices to the detriment of American workers and American farmers. And so my hope is that the president can get to the end game, negotiate the deal, and deliver for American farmers and workers to the benefit of the United States, and forcing China to ultimately be held accountable.
Well, yeah, we'll see where that goes, because there's more countries involved in that. The whole world is involved now. And the president is talking to Japan. He just announced that on Twitter. Cambodia, Vietnam have reached out. We also know that Italy says we want to de-escalate and get conversations immediately. And UK is saying all the right things. France is not. They look to retaliate. Maybe the EU will retaliate wholly. And maybe by the end of the day, they're meeting right now. So do you think the president wants to cut a deal, or do you think he wants to hold out for the tariff revenue?
Well, my hope is that we hold out and we cut a deal. I think it's to the benefit of all of us, in particular hardworking American families, that we get to the end game, which I hope is free, fair, reciprocal trade. I'd rather do that than focus in on tariffs as a revenue source. Yes, they generate revenue, but I'm far more focused in on making sure that mm-hmm. other countries are buying the products we're making.
Right.
Big picture. Washington really has a spending problem, not a taxing problem. And so the focus needs to be in on reducing spending in Washington, not on raising revenue.
All right. So here, right, our revenue is all-time high, but so is our spending. And it never came down from the pandemic. Howard Lutnick was on. And these guys are all competent. They're all fully bought into the Trump agenda. But I do think they're wondering what the president wants. And this is what I'm talking about. Cut 12.
Just to be clear, April 9th. The so-called retaliatory tariffs, the reciprocal tariffs, I should say, are those coming or are they open to negotiation?
The tariffs are coming. He announced
okay.
it and he wasn't kidding. The tariffs
okay.
are coming. Of course they are.
All right. So they're coming, but this doesn't mean it won't negotiate. For example, when the market, if the market could see victories with nations that aren't China, I know China will be the hardest. Do you think they'll respond positively and get people a little calmer?
Well, I think that's our opportunity, is to have the president strike deals with some of our allies around the globe. It's positive news that Japan is reaching out, a great ally of the United States. And we may be in a position to strengthen our trade relationship and making sure that Japan is buying products from the United States. It's really China that is the worst abuser of trade practices around the globe. Former administrations have refused to hold China accountable. And the actions taken by the president puts him in a position to strike deals with our allies and then to turn the full attention of the globe upon China and address the abuse of the trade practices that China has been doing for decades.
Yeah, I mean, China is the issue now. They've hit us back with 34%, but it looks like China needs our market. And there was a big story in the Wall Street Journal today that the president was in no rush to talk to him. Mike Waltz was not in a rush to answer the call from his counterpart over on China. And we have not sent envoys over there, nor have we set up that meeting in Mar-a-Lago that he had the first time around. Is that an intentional strategy?
Well, that could very likely be a negotiating tactic by the president. I think that makes sense. He's not going to want to walk over and rush and appear as if he's nervous or looking to remove them immediately, although the negotiations that may be taking place may set him up to do just that. So, again, we're seeing multiple countries reaching out to the White House, asking for negotiations, putting the president in a position to deliver a victory for American trade, again, with the gorilla in the room being China and the abuses that they have taken, ignoring the fundamental treaty agreements that they have regarding trade, where they're subsidizing key industries, where they are manipulating their currency. It's ultimately, at the end of the day, positioning us, I believe, to work with our allies and address the abuse from China.
Right. So right now on the House, you guys have finally worked it out. I guess Congresswoman Luna said, when a woman gives birth, she should be able to remote vote. And the speaker said, essentially, can't do that because it's a slippery slope. And then all of a sudden someone turns an ankle. They have a family issue. They have a problem with their plane. Or what about the paternity? Do you get paternity time? Next thing you know, no one will be showing up to work. But it seems as though you guys have worked it out. Can you give me the details on this?
Well, I'm sympathetic to the argument of why we want to allow people to proxy vote, but I am of the belief that you got to be there to do the job. And what do I mean by that? A lot of negotiations take place in person on the House floor. And when Nancy Pelosi put in the proxy advising of the proxy voting system, what it really did is gutted out the ability of members to negotiate and further empowered then Speaker Nancy Pelosi. This goes back to more of a gentleman's agreement, which has existed in the Senate and previous times existed in the House, where two people would both sit it out on each side, respecting the fact that something may be occurring in someone's personal life. Maybe it's something celebratory, like having the birth of a child. Maybe it's something that's far more upsetting to a family, where it could be a spouse or an individual diagnosed with a serious degree of cancer. And so bringing back the gentleman's agreement, where two people could sit it out for a vote, allowing an individual to be home for a reasonable reason, I think is actually a pretty good middle-of-the-ground approach that the speaker has put forward.
Yeah, I think it looks like it's going to work. So the SAVE Act was supposed to be on the docket last week. What could you tell us about it now?
Well, this is our opportunity, and it's on the docket this week, to actually make sure that our elections are for U.S. citizens only. Just today, there's a new report that comes out that possible non-citizens voted in the state of Michigan. We know at least one Chinese national did vote in the state of Michigan last year. We're putting forward legislation through the House that says if you are registering to vote, you simply need to prove that you're a United States citizen. We know millions of individuals are in this country illegally, in addition to legal immigrants inside the United States. We know the National Registration Voter Act that requires state Department of Motor Vehicles or whatever it's called in your respective state to hand over voting documents when driver's licenses are provided. When that bill was drafted, it was assumed that only U.S. citizens would be getting driver's licenses. But as we know, Democratic-led states, blue states like Illinois and others, are giving out driver's licenses to illegal immigrants, at which point they receive documents to vote. This is absolutely nuts. So the bill, the SAVE Act, fixes the NVRA, makes it where it's an American first, preserving the priority that only U.S. citizens can vote in U.S. elections. We have a big opportunity to bring it forward. I'll remind all of the listeners that there were actually a couple Democrats who voted with us on this. And the reason that that's important is because now when this bill goes over to the United States Senate, unlike with then Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat, refusing to bring it up, we have an opportunity to have this bill brought up in the Senate and either hold our Democratic senators accountable for failing to vote for it or get the hard work of finding possibly seven Dems who would allow us to sign this into law.
You know, what's interesting is 70% of the public thinks you should have voter ID. So I don't even know who they're sticking up for. You also talked about, too, when it comes to fundraising, you've done an investigation into Act Blue, and it seems they're a lot of their fundraising standards are lower. Therefore, you have a lot of people from outside the country contributing.
Yeah, this is one of our big challenges, is how do we make sure Americans have confidence in our election system and in particular in the campaign finance system? If you're like me, I think there's way too much money in politics. But at an absolute minimum, we should be able to be confident that it is not foreign money in our elections. I began an investigation into Act Blue, that large Democratic online fundraising platform, began looking at their security protocols. And what did we discover? We discovered that Act Blue had incredibly lenient security protocols in place. So, for example, at the very beginning, we discovered Act Blue was not even requiring that 3- or 4-digit code on the back of your credit card, a CVV number, that you have to type in almost any time you buy something online. Act Blue wasn't automatically rejecting prepaid cards from high-risk countries. And so our investigation continued on. We joined in with the Judiciary and Oversight Committees as well, as we have identified significant lax protocols in place that don't give us confidence is exactly how Act Blue is raising these funds. Act Blue and other online platforms need to dramatically improve their standards, and we need to pass legislation to force them to do it.
You have 237 individual donations were made from foreign IP addresses?
Yeah, we have a lot of evidence that their protocols would allow abuse of the system, and it's why our investigation continues. When you see foreign IP addresses, in theory, that could be a U.S. citizen on vacation who decides that's the moment in time they want to make a donation. But in practice, we also know that that is a highly suspect transmission of funds into Democratic campaigns and needs to be fully investigated.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see what happens this week. When you saw the Senate version of the Big Beautiful Bill, were you as upset as Jody Arrington?
Well, I viewed it as woefully inadequate on savings to the spending problem that we have in Washington. We talked about that a little bit earlier as it relates to tariffs. Washington has a massive addiction to spending, and that blew the roof off as we entered the COVID pandemic period. Simply returning to pre-pandemic numbers would dramatically improve our position and our ability to get the country back on track. The House version takes a substantive step forward. The Senate version of this legislation is woefully inadequate. That said, the bill that came before the Senate is not actually the lawmaking exercise itself. It's really a step in the process that unlocks the keys to reconciliation, allowing us to actually pass the legislation. And so, step one, let's get a budget reconciliation bill that is simply a procedural step to get us to the final part.
Right.
But the Senate bill is woefully inadequate.
Well, what would you cut? What do you want to cut? Because you have to add, everyone knows you got to defense spend, but they got to just fix their spending practices with the Pentagon. But like, where else would the House want to cut?
Well, I think we have huge opportunities as we look at both protecting key programs, Social Security, Medicare. Right. But then as we look at other programs, we have seen significant abuse inside programs like Medicaid. It's not cutting the program. It's looking at the end result. States like Wisconsin maintain reasonably high standards for an individual to be able to gain access to Medicaid. But we've also seen states like California abuse the process. So California has removed the asset test to gain access to Medicaid. What does that gobbledygook mean? It means how much money you have should be a factor as to whether or not you're allowed to get on the Medicaid rolls in the first place. And so California, for example, to show you a radical example, an individual could win a multi-million-dollar lottery win in the state of California, yet still be eligible to go on the rolls for Medicaid in that state because they don't even test for assets. So we need to make sure that we are putting programs in place to truly protect the most vulnerable. And that program was set up for women and children.
But you don't.
But
so the Senate didn't look into it.
To help people get on their feet.
The Senate didn't even address that, is what you're saying.
The Senate bill does not put that forward. And again, the Senate bill is not a lawmaking exercise. It's going to unlock the keys for step two, where we can actually make these types of reforms.
Right. But do you think when Jody Arrington comes out and says how woeful it is, do you think that that is something that could be handled by a phone call? And do you think that that just jumps on critics and gives anti-Trumpers something to go on?
No, I think it's really part of the messy process of unlocking the keys to reconciliation, allowing us to get through the 60-vote hurdle in the Senate. And so this is a procedural step in the process. I don't love the Senate bill, but the bottom line is it's not the final bill, meaning this is really unlocking us in a position to have that negotiation to make sure we're getting these savings. It's going to be a bit of a messy process because many of us are on the conservative side saying the spending in Washington is wildly out of control, and the Senate bill just simply does not set us up for as much success as I would like to see.
Plenty of growth, but doesn't have to pay for is with the no tax on tips and the no tax on Social Security, right?
Exactly. And that's all going to be part of this big, beautiful bill that'll be negotiated out from the tax perspective as well as the spending side.
Last question. What is the earliest you could see it being done?
Well, I'm of the view we need to get all of us in the room, and that's going to involve, obviously, the administration as well. I would love to hit this deadline of Memorial Day at the end of May. I don't know how practical that is, but the sooner we all get in the room, including the administration, the House, the Senate, the administration, the more likely we are to be successful in getting this through quickly.
I just don't know what is more important than that, and I think you agree with me. Congressman Brian Stile, thanks so much. Republican out of Wisconsin, appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Back in a moment. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
A lot of the national attention that we see is really focused on the southern border. You know, but there is a bit of a quiet crisis or an expanding issue that's developing and unfolding along our northern border. And Customs and Border Patrol seen a fairly alarming increase in illegal crossings, drug trafficking, and even encountering individuals on the terrorist watch list. And so as difficult as securing the southern border has been, the northern border is twice as long.
People who have said the president's making up a story about the northern border and picking a fight with Canada for no reason. You missed 60 Minutes about a month ago where they talked about the perilous journey so many are choosing to take from the south to come in from the north because the southern border is getting so reinforced. Now you have this story today that the northern border crossings are surging. So you got to go tell all these guys in Buffalo and in Michigan, they got to start picking up the pace. But what would help is if Canada did it. And what they're seeing early is they're not, even though they say they now have a drug czar and a fentanyl czar and they got they have a task force. That's what the president's saying. And remember, fundamentally, this began. Remember, I know now why he wanted to wait a week, because they had the special election. Because if he brought this up with the special election about to happen, who knows if Florida might have panicked and those two seats might have been in jeopardy. But Wisconsin didn't go their way anyway. But now that that's done, you have this period of time to reconfigure and remake almost all the global trade relationships. It's happening. Question is he staring down our allies and rivals for the best deal? Or does he really just want to charge everyone 10% more for everything coming in order to get more revenue into the kitty to balance out our budget and take the pressure off income tax? I don't know if that's going to work, because the other thing is, if you cut a real deal, could a deal actually also stop manufacturing from flooding back to America, which even can't happen immediately? Interesting times.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
If it's a crowbar and other people eliminate their tariffs, then, and we eliminate ours, and it's just making a deal,
then we don't raise any revenue, nor do we get any businesses to relocate to the United States. If it's a permanent revenue source and trying to get businesses to relocate to the United States, then we're going to have these tariffs permanently. So the president can't have it both ways, and we don't know which way the choice is going to be made, but either way, we're not going to get the things that the president is promising.
Well, put it this way, a lot of it's unprecedented. Even a guy like Larry Summers, who's seen it all, has never seen anything quite like this. Some people love it. Steve Bannon's on the record loving it. A lot of people say that's why I voted for President Trump. But right now, he's meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu. This could be the first deal that he announces that could reverse the direction of the market. It has been going down for the last 3 days, lost going into today about $6 trillion in value. But you can't base your policy over the stock market, especially when you see an endemic fundamental problem with our economy that is $37 or $36 trillion in debt. Congressman Mike Collins joins us now. He's on Transportation Infrastructure, Chairman of the Subcommittee on Research and Technology, Vice Chair of the Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigations. But I just want to talk about what's happening today with the market, with the president possibly cutting a deal. Your thoughts, Congressman?
Well, Brian, I think that the fact that we are almost $38 trillion in debt is the prime example of what we've been doing in the past hadn't been working. And President Trump has stepped out of the box and said that, look, we don't mind. We love free market out here, but it's got to be fair, and it's got to be fair both ways. And so these countries that have been putting tariffs on us and keeping us from importing products into their country, those days are over with. And, you know, as far as that stock market's concerned, Brian, I would bet you and guarantee you 50% of America out there doesn't even participate in the stock market. They're blue-collar people, yeah. And Wall Street has had their day in the sun and in the limelight. It's time to let Main Street folks get their day. That's why those union workers are so happy when GM decided, you know what, we're going to produce more pickups in the United States of America. But it's not just a one-prong approach with tariffs. There's a separate side of this, and this is one of the reasons that I came to Congress, and that is to get the regulations off the backs of the American small businesses. You get regulations more business-friendly. You get taxes off the backs of these entrepreneurs out there. And, Brian, I guarantee you this place will hum like a sewing machine, like it did during the first Trump administration.
But I will say that between 60 and 70% of the American public had either 401k or a pension involved in the stock market, whether you're a teacher or a firefighter.
They do, but they're not trading daily. They're not looking at today. They're looking at the end of their career.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope their career is not today. But in the big picture, do you think that the president should, do you think he will, according to your sources, start cutting deals with other countries? Well, China might be the most important and the EU second. The other countries like Vietnam, like Cambodia, Italy, Japan, Israel, obviously, are all saying, I'm ready to talk to the UK. I'm ready to talk to the president. What do you think his approach is?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they're not already talking. You know, you don't want to be the last one to the party. You want to get on up there and let, you know, let's make our deal first so that you get the best deal. I'm sure that the White House is already in negotiations with other countries.
So here's what Tom Cotton said. The big story is China. And they immediately fired back with 34% tariffs. And the president came back on Truth Social and said they blew it. They panicked. I'm not sure what he means by that. But here's what Tom Cotton said. Cut 20.
China has waged an economic world war, especially against the United States, going back several decades. They've subsidized their own companies. They give them all kinds of concessions on taxes and land and regulation. Oftentimes, they own these companies, something no American company can compete with fairly. At the same time, they attack our companies. They hack into their systems to steal their intellectual property. They exclude them from the Chinese market. They have forced technology transfers if they admit them to the Chinese market. So what President Trump has long tried to do is level the playing field with communist China.
And so far, the strategy is not to engage. And according to the Wall Street Journal, it's really caught the Chinese by surprise.
Sure. Well, and I think Tom Cotton's hitting the nail on the head. You know, the Chinese need us way more than we need them because they prop up their whole business community. A lot of them are fake businesses. They subsidize everything pretty much is state-owned over there. If their economy crashes because they can't import goods into our country, then they don't have an economy over there. So for them to start retaliating, that's fine. We already were prohibited from sending products over there. You know, no matter what kind of tariff they put on us. And Brian, that's what I don't understand. If tariffs are so bad, then why do all these other countries have them?
Right. Good point. We'll see what happens. It's got a lot of economists scratching their head waiting to see what happens. They're going to certainly have to rewrite a lot of economic books. Congressman, when you talk about it.
I tell you what, Brian, I wouldn't bet against President Trump. He's a successful businessman. He knows how to compete. He knows how to win. And I get he's not up there trying to kill the American worker. He's trying to help these folks that need help across this country that have been beat to death with inflation, taxes, and regulations for their entire lives.
I want you to hear what Jim Farley said. He's the president of Ford, obviously. And they are the most American-made company of all the auto companies. But they do have to go outside the borders. Cut 23.
This is really the essential point of working closely with our leaders in D.C. on the details, because the details matter greatly. Yeah, we have thousands of parts in our American-made vehicles, and we want to keep them as affordable as possible. Some of those parts, like wiring looms and others, are specialty kind of work. And as we work through this with the administration, we're optimistic we can find the right balance between affordability and a strong industry where we can add jobs to the industry in the coming months and years.
So they're nervous, but they want to be able to work with the president, but they're waiting to see how it's going to affect him.
Well, and I can understand that. I'm a small businessman myself. I'm in the trucking business. But just because my tires go up or the cost of my equipment goes up, then if I've got contract rates that are set, I don't just run to my customer and raise my rates. My rates are set. Now, if they're good business people, which I'm sure Ford is, I'm sure they've negotiated these prices coming in from these other countries. Those people will eat a lot of that tariff that's about to hit them, and they won't pass it on to their customer.
So a couple of things with this. There's a couple of things. First off, we have the midterms a year away, and at which time Georgia's going to have a big Senate race coming up. John Ossoff is said to be look vulnerable, especially if your governor gets in the race. Where do you stand?
Well, if governor gets in, I'll be right there behind him.
You think he is?
John Ossoff needs to go. John Ossoff has been one of the worst senators that's ever represented or tried to represent the state of Georgia. He does not represent our values. And he needs to be voted out, and he can be voted out.
Do you think Kemp is the guy? Kemp is the guy who's the most popular, but if he doesn't run, do you think he's still vulnerable?
Of course he is. Sure he is. You just got to have some, Georgia will produce a good candidate on the Republican side. But like I say, Governor Kemp, he's got the popularity, he's got the backing, the money, and the polls show that he can beat Ossoff.
All right, so let's talk about what you have your op-ed about, and you talk about trying to put an end to these weaponizations of the courts, whether it's the judges or the lawsuits, in Trump in particular. Yeah. How can you do something in Congress?
Well, and Brian, tort reform is just a matter of getting the legal system back to a balance of fairness. It has swung so far to these trial lawyers, these billboard attorneys, these nuclear verdicts, just out of control awards. And what we've put out and are dropping with these staged accidents on getting some of this tort to get the courts back in a line where it's more fair. It's costing trucking companies out there. It's costing businesses, small businesses. It's costing every American, actually, the average family, over $4,000 a year just from these verdicts. So we get some teeth in this, get some teeth to where it says if you're staging accidents, We've got other parts of tort reform that are coming out that are going to make these people responsible, that are actually staging accidents or filing these frivolous lawsuits.
Yeah, I guess we're gonna see what happens. Also, if they could somehow have a judge reform where these district courts aren't making foreign policy, that would certainly help.
Yeah, that would too. And there's a lot of there's some good bills out there with that as well.
Congressman, my last question to you, though, I know you got to run, is just about, is there going to be an investigation? Do you think it'd be worth your time to find out who was running the country during the Biden years? I mean, with these books, these revelations, all our suspicions have been confirmed. All the things that we saw has been confirmed. He was a failing president who was basically running the country with an auto pen. I mean, that should not be allowed. We know about the Woodrow Wilson thing that happened when he had a stroke and they didn't tell us. But this is in 2024, real questions about who's running the country. How far, if at all, do you plan on with the Oversight Committee looking into this?
Oh, I think Oversight's going to have a big play in trying to figure out just exactly who has been running this country for the past 4 years. I mean, anybody can tell. It didn't take much to look and tell that Joe Biden was obviously not the person in charge, whether it was Obama, whether it was a corporate board, whatever it was. But the American people deserve to know who was at the head of this thing, especially with the condition that they left the country in.
And he could honestly say that he had nothing to do with it, which is sad. Congressman Mike Collins, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. As I mentioned before, at the top of the hour, I'm going to be outnumbered. Tomorrow, next we're going to have more to know. But I do want to go over a couple other things that we have not really gone over yet, and that is, I do believe that Netanyahu today is coming to the White House for one reason. I know the tariffs looks like the front and center, but you know that they can't go a few more weeks and allow Iran to continue to build up that alliance with Russia and China to the point where next thing you know, you'll wake up in the morning, they'll have a brand new cutting edge missile defense system, and they took it out. I think they know they've got to finish them off. They are still supplying Hamas with weapons. They're still supplying the Houthi rebel with weapons. They're still supplying the Iranian militias in Iraq with weapons that are targeting our guys in Iraq. And we have to always worry about our 700 to 1,200, depending on the day that we find out the numbers in Syria. So I think this is going to be go down when they write the book on Trump story. This is going to be the visit to outline the attack. That is going to do the best they can to finally marginalize our 40-year enemy. See you outnumbered shortly. Back in a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
The restaurant chain Hooters has filed for bankruptcy. Apparently, their business model was a bust. A British woman says that her one-year-old son ate her father's ashes. So in a way, he does have his grandpa's eyes.
That is pretty funny. I didn't see that part. I mean, these are quick, like, punchlines.
They're so fast.
Kenny Youngman, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a great chemistry. What I loved is that one actress that came out and pretended to say, I like to audition for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And she speaks like the King's English. But she came out like Congresswoman Crockett. You know, speaking slang and street, whatever. It was hysterical to the point where Michael Che and Colin Jost were laughing behind her, like legitimate laughing. But the cold open, average at best, and the first skit with Jack Black, absolutely awful on a dating game with a format that probably nobody understands.
So I didn't even see that much. I did watch the cold open. It was fine. It wasn't great. It was sort of expected. That's a good thing to know for the future, that you love that part of Weekend Update about the woman that came out, so we can grab some cuts so we can laugh.
Oh, yeah. I think it would be good. I think mostly it is that she's almost laughing doing it because they couldn't, whatever. I thought it was good. And by the way, the woman's, it's probably in my more to know. You know what I'm thinking? Before I go to Outnumbered, I find out if I need to know more?
We can.
More to know.
So Jay North starred in a show I loved when I was little, even though, believe me, I wasn't around when it was live on the air. I was at the repeats when you're sick at school or you have an off day like President's Day. You watch these sitcoms, and it's Dennis the Menace. He's dead at 73 years old. He died in Florida after battling colon cancer. He also, according to a social media post shared by his longtime friends, Lassie actor John Provost and wife Lori Jacobson. So that's unbelievable that child stars actually kept in touch when they were adults.
Agreed, Lassie. I mean, when's the last time you talked about or heard about Lassie?
But you know what's so interesting about Lassie? There was a time when collies were hot. I mean, there was Lassie, and there was another hero dog. Collies were a hot dog.
Was the other dog like a cop?
Yeah. I forgot the name of it. There was also Run, Joe, Run. German Shepherds were hot for a while. There were dolphins. Flipper was hot.
Flipper
used to fight crime in the water. Ever since then, Aquaman came on, kind of took his thunder.
So do you think that stopped because of, like, the PETA crew? Or yes. People just realized it wasn't
absolutely
a good idea?
Gentle Ben. Yeah. Got a bear. I mean, there was a
Mr.
sense.
Mr. Ed.
Yeah. There was a sense that, I guess, it wasn't just about humans. It's about animals. So Dennis Menace ran for 4 seasons between 1959 and 63. North brought to light. They call it an impish boy. Initially made famous in newspaper comic strips. So Dennis Menace, it's too bad. His name was Dickie Roberts. Was his name Dickie Roberts? Yeah. North of his last credit was Dickie Roberts, the former child star in 2003. All right, best of luck. Next, a nationwide boycott on Walmart is planned for today. They're going to boycott Great Value, Equate, Mainstays, George Clothing, Parents' Choice Baby Products, all that sell at Walmart. Why? Because they got rid of the DEI program. Ladies and gentlemen, do the opposite. While everyone stays away from Walmart, if you think DEI is backwards and hurts the country, like I do, please go shop at Walmart today. Next, artist who painted the worst Trump portrait ever for Colorado State Capitol says a 41-year-old career might be ended. The artist did do it. It was terrible. You saw the picture, right?
I mean, it looked like he put on a few pounds.
Right. I mean, they made him look bad on purpose. I don't know if it's on purpose, but it seems like that. She's a professional artist in Colorado. She did this. She said, I completed the portrait accurately without purposeful distortion, political bias, or any attempt to caricature the subject, actual or implied. I fulfilled the task per my contract for the 6 years that the portrait hung in the Colorado State Building. Since Trump's comments, that has changed for the worst. President Trump is entitled to comment freely. So the woman, I'm trying to get her name. Do we have her name?
Is it Sarah Boardman?
Yeah, Sarah
it says,
Boardman.
Quote, Sarah Boardman.
She's finished.
She's done.
Yeah.
Unless someone, you know, is looking to gain a few pounds, maybe they'll ask her to paint them.
Maybe. Next, Gen Z is branded as the ghosted generation as dates, colleges, employers keep saying no. Ghosted on dating apps, rejected by colleges and passed over for jobs. Rejection isn't fleeting for Gen Z, they go on to say. Why? Because young adults come of age in a culture shaped by hyper-curated digital existences, political tumult, cultural and economic instability. Makes them a bad risk for employers.
Clearly.
What can you do? See you on Outnumbered.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of 5 serial predators from across the United States.
It's a very disturbing case.
In never-before-heard interviews and first-hand perspectives.
It's described as pure evil. That's a good description.
The Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door. Listen and follow now with Amazon Music. Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.